So now we have some time for some questions and some discussion here, so please ask whatever you wish. So the situation is that she has a friend who does hospice work, and one of the patients and clients in the hospice work is terminally ill with cancer, and he's done some harmful actions in his life, and he wants to make amends now before he dies, and especially he's seeking his wife's forgiveness, and his wife is saying no. You know, I don't want to forgive you. So it's a very painful situation. It's a very sad situation. So she would like my comments on it. Okay, one comment is, we've all made mistakes. The principal thing in our being able to purify our negative karma is for us to be able to regret our mistakes. So we generate very sincere regret, and then we try and restore the relationship through, in the case of holy beings, by taking refuge with them if they were the ones that we harm, or in the case of other sentient beings, by generating bodhicitta towards them. That's the way to restore the relationship. So the main way of restoring the relationship is the transformation in our own heart. Yeah, the main way of purifying is by generating regret in our own heart. So I think that it needs to be pointed out to this man that, yes, of course you're seeking your wife's forgiveness, but you've already done the important step of acknowledging the harm that you've done. And even if she is unable to forgive you right now, don't worry about it, because her lack of forgiveness is her problem. And you can die knowing that you have regretted the wrongs that you've done, and you don't need to carry that baggage with you as you die. Okay? So that needs to be made clear to the dying person, so that they don't feel like they're being held hostage by the person who won't forgive them. They need to know that they've done the essential part of the purification work by generating regret, and from their side, having a kind attitude towards the person they have, that they harmed, and also developing a very strong intention not to do the action again. So make that evident to the person who's dying, so that they can die with a clear conscience and a clear mind without being held captive, okay, or being held hostage by the unforgiving spouse. Okay. In the case of the spouse, what you need to do, and you know, whenever you go on hospice work, I think one of the first things you need to do is drop your agenda. Drop your idea of how you want the situation to be. Because if you go into a situation such as counseling or hospice or whatever with your idea of, I want him to apologize and I want her to forgive, and then I want him to have a nice peaceful death with her at the bedside holding his hand. You know? I mean, are you trying to help them, or are you trying to choreograph your own, you know, the drama that you invented in your own head? Yeah? It's extremely important when we're trying to help others to let go of our expectation and our ideas of how we think they should behave, how we think they should feel, what we think they should do and say. You gotta drop it. Okay? Because if your friend is going in there with the idea, I am going to get that woman to forgive her husband if it kills me, you know, then you're going to have more death than his on your hands. Okay? So that person who feels that it's so difficult to forgive, She needs some compassion. If you go in there and you're just pushing and pushing and pushing, she doesn't have the emotional nourishment that she needs to be able to forgive. So you have to give her some emotional nourishment. She needs some compassion. Yeah. You need to say, yes, you've suffered a lot, and that hurts. Yeah. She needs to feel like somebody understands her suffering. And when she feels that somebody has understood her suffering, then you can start to say, wouldn't it be nice to let go of that suffering? And then she can start to think, oh yeah, I've suffered, somebody understands it, but I don't want to hold on to that suffering. I've held on to it long enough. And then she might be able to start forgiving. Because the forgiving is benefits her. She's the main recipient of the forgiveness. He benefits a little, but his main benefit came from the regret. Her main benefit comes from forgiving. But, you know, she needs to feel understood before she's going to be able to forgive. And it, you know, you don't know whether you have the time left before he dies for her to feel sufficiently understood so she can forgive. So you just have to give up your agenda and your expectations and just do what you can in the situation. Mm-hmm. And maybe we can all make prayers for them. How do we regain our delight in the Dharma? This is assuming that you've lost your delight. Yeah. And sometimes that happens. You know, I think one of there's a few ways in which we lose our delight in the Dharma. One way is when our practice just becomes very rote. You know, oh yeah, I did this meditation yesterday, and I did it the day before. And I know I'm going to do it today, and I know I'm going to do it tomorrow, and it's so boring. You know, I'm just bored with my meditation. Okay, that's one way we lose our delight in the Dharma. Another way we lose our delight in the Dharma is we get distracted by all the pleasures of samsara. Oh, Prince Charming! He's so much better than the Buddha. Yeah. And our mind is zipped off, you know. We can spend hours meditating on the wonders of Prince Charming. You know, and the Buddha, you know, is not nearly as sexy or interesting. Okay, so we've gotten distracted by samsara. Okay, so that makes us lose our delight in the Dharma. Another way we lose our delight in the Dharma is we push ourselves. Yeah, we develop this mind of, okay, I've got to try harder. I've got to meditate really well. I've got to gain samadhi. Single pointed, undistracted, enlightenment. You know, and we get so tight, you know, we just get wound up and tight, and we push ourselves and beat ourselves up. Oh, I've got to be a better disciple. Oh, I've got to meditate more. Oh, I'm so selfish. Oh, I'm so ignorant. Hurt. You know? And we just beat ourselves up. Okay? Self-criticism, self-hatred. You know? Oh, I just can't practice well. I'm so terrible. Okay? So that also makes us lose our joy in the Dharma, doesn't it? Okay? So you can see, just by how all those different mental states are, you can see that all of them are unrealistic and really quite dumb. Aren't they? you know, bored with the Dharma. Well, you know, enliven your practice. Make it more relevant to your own life. Think about the Dharma in terms of your own life, or think about your own life in terms of the Buddha's teaching. Then your practice won't be boring anymore. If you're distracted by samsara, you know, if you start thinking Prince Charming is better than the Buddha, you got real problems. Okay? If you think that new condo is better than the Pure Land, think again. Okay? You know? So meditate a little bit on death. Think of the disadvantages of cyclic existence. That'll bring your mind back to the Dharma. You won't be so distracted. Okay? If you're beating yourself up, thinking that you should be better, just recognize I am what I am, and I can accept myself for what I am. I can accept myself for what I am now and try and change and be better in the future. Why not? Okay. So just let go of all that self-hatred and self-criticism. Then your practice gets more exciting. Also, think of the qualities of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and Arhats. Yeah. Think of the good qualities of the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. That makes our mind very happy, and it inspires our mind to practice the path to gain those same qualities ourselves. Okay. You had a question.
Two questions.
Okay.
I'm very inspired with your book, Working with Anger.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd just like to understand what inspired you to write that book.
You really want to know?
And the second question actually is a very Singaporean question.
Uh-huh.
Actually, what's the quickest way actually to put someone's anger out on yourself in the sense that you're very angry, young, quick-tempered person?
You mean if you're a quick-tempered person?
Either that or an unperson. I might have a colleague who's very quick to get angry.
Uh-huh.
Or I'm really a quick-tempered person. What's the quickest way? As Singaporeans always want the quickest.
Oh, yeah. quick, cheap, easy. Extinguish my anger. Extinguish their anger. Read the book. Okay? You have a colleague that has a problem with anger, you leave the book, Working with Anger, Lying Around. But his first question was, what inspired me to write Working with Anger? What inspired me was my own anger and my own misery at being angry. Okay? I had a lot of trouble, and still do sometimes, with anger. Okay. I'm not necessarily the kind of person who explodes. Yeah. But you can be very angry and not explode. Okay. You can be very angry, and what do? You shut up and shut down inside. I'm so angry that I don't look at you. I don't talk to you. I don't even recognize you exist. Yeah? Who else deals with their anger like that? Who of you are the explosive people? Yell, scream, shout, throw things. Who of you are the shut down people? Don't say anything. Okay, so we have the hot way of dealing with anger and we spew it out, and we have the cold way of dealing with anger and we freeze it inside. Okay, so I was pretty miserable with my own anger. Yeah. And so, in particular, when I was living in Italy, my teacher sent me to work at a Dharma center in Italy. So I am kind of, you know, an American woman who believes in gender equality. And he sent me to work with one macho Italian monk. Boy, huh? We were there was no nuclear test ban treaty between us. So I would get angry at him every day, and I'd go back to my room and I would read Shantideva's book, Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life, chapter 6 on patience. I would read it every night, calm down, go back, see him the next day, get angry again. Because this guy, it was all his fault. You've got to understand that. I was sweet and innocent. I didn't do anything wrong. I was so pleasant, easy to get along. Well, maybe once in a while I was a little difficult. But really, I mean, it was all his fault. Totally his fault. He did this and he did this and he did this and he did this. You know, believe me. So, anyway, okay, so you get the point? So, you know, I'd get angry at him during the day, read this book at night. And yeah, and so I began to learn the book quite well. You know, it took me a while to learn to practice it. You know, but you know, you just keep trying. You just keep putting it into practice. Just keep doing it again and again and again. There's no other way. You know, you just keep doing it. Okay. And so it was through learning Shantideva's book very well and dealing with the, you know, working with those methods in my own life, and then seeing, thinking, you know, that other people suffer from anger and perhaps they could benefit from this as well. So I wrote the book. It's entirely plagiarized. Okay, not one new idea. Everything is copied from Shantideva. Completely admit it. Yeah, totally plagiarized everything he wrote. But he lived 12 or 13 centuries ago, so maybe he won't sue me. But, you know, I just tried to take his ideas and, you know, put them, give modern examples to him. Okay?